Jeff Wilson with the Jesus Walk Bible Study Series. We're looking at 1 Corinthians, Discipleship Lessons for a Troubled Church, and this is the introduction to 1 Corinthians. The ancient city of Corinth showed signs of human habitation as far back as the early Neolithic period. Its location was ideal, with an abundant water supply, only 1.5 miles south of the Isthmus of Corinth, a narrow land bridge, only 3.9 miles wide, which connects the Peloponnesian Peninsula to the Greek mainland. Thus, Corinth became prosperous from trade, both the trade moving by sea east and west, but also north and south between Greece and Peloponnesus. The port of Cenchreae connected the city to the Aegean Sea to the east, while the port of Lechaeum was on the Ionian Sea. In 1893, a canal was cut across the isthmus to accommodate shipping, but in the days of the early church, there was no such luxury, so all goods continuing on must be unpacked and transported by land to the opposite port. This guaranteed Corinth's wealth from tariffs as well as its prominence as an international crossroads for commerce, ideas, cultures, and religions. Ruins of the Temple of Apollo, dating to the 6th century BC, can still be seen. Shops and monuments lining the agora, larger than the Forum in Rome, also persist. The Temple of Asclepius, the god of healing, was built on the north edge of the city. To the south, the Acro-Corinthian fortress at the height of 1,886 feet could control all the trade routes. At its peak stood the Temple of Aphrodite, goddess of love and beauty, where 1,000 female prostitutes served, contributing to the city's reputation for immorality. In fact, the coined Greek word to Corinthianize meant to practice immorality, and the phrase Corinthian girl designated a prostitute. The Romans conquered and destroyed Corinth in 146 BC. In 46 BC, Julius Caesar refounded it as a Roman colony. In 27 AD, it became the seat of government for the Roman province of Achaia. As a Roman colony, its citizens were primarily Romans, perhaps freedmen from Italy, but its population also included Greeks and a considerable Jewish community. As a chief trade center, it would become a strategic base of operations for Paul, since he would meet and minister to many people traveling through, causing the gospel to spread even farther. Paul first visited Corinth about 50 AD during the last phase of his second missionary journey, after starting churches in Macedonia, Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. He came to Corinth after visiting Athens and stayed with a couple of Jewish tent makers, Aquila and Priscilla, who had recently been forced to leave Rome due to an edict by Emperor Claudius about 49 AD. Paul was joined in Corinth by Silas and Timothy. Under their ministry, the church grew. Paul seems to have been in danger during this time. When the Jews appealed to the Roman proconsul Gallio to force Paul to leave, they were rebuffed. Paul left Corinth probably in the spring of 52 AD, giving him 2 years there. After leaving Corinth, Paul stopped at Ephesus and then returned to Antioch. From there he went to Jerusalem. The congregation developed into a large church made up of house church congregations scattered across the city. We read in Acts 18, 8 through 10, many of the Corinthians who heard Paul became believers and were baptized. One night the Lord said to Paul in a vision, "Do not be afraid, but speak and do not be silent, for I am with you, and no one will lay a hand on you to harm you, for there are many in this city who are my people." Because of the types of problems Paul writes to the church about, it appears that they were predominantly Gentile, made up of a broad mix of social levels. In the intervening years, Paul was in the midst of a very successful mission in Ephesus that reached people all over the province of Asia Minor. But now the church was troubled. It was at odds with its founding apostle about a number of issues that threatened its spiritual life. And ironically, the central issue was what it meant to be spiritual. Clustered around this issue were a number of related issues. Paul had attempted to correct some of them in an earlier letter, which we do not have, but he has heard from Chloe's people and by letter of a number of continuing problems, which I'll list here. Number one, competing allegiances to various leaders, Apollos, Paul, and Peter, that caused disunity and divisions. Two, a pride in a Hellenistic understanding of philosophy and rhetoric rather than in the simple gospel. 3, a rejection of Paul's apostolic authority over them. 4, pride in their tolerant attitude towards sexual immorality. 5, rejection of the church's authority to settle disputes, rather taking them to public courts. 6, immorality with prostitutes. 7, rejection of marriage and celibacy. 8, idolatry in eating of food sacrificed to idols. 9, offense at Paul refusing sponsorship rather than making the gospel free of charge. 10, rebellion in hairstyles and coverings. 11, casual disregard for the proper receiving of the Lord's Supper. 12, exaltation of tongues over other important spiritual gifts, such as prophecy, misunderstanding the nature of the church as a body. 13, disorder in church meetings. 14, disbelief in the resurrection of the dead. 1 Corinthians is the strongest exhortation of any of Paul's letters that have survived, though it is not the first he has written them. A previous visit turned out to be a disaster. See Appendix 3 for a tentative chronology of Paul and the Corinthians. So for most of our letter, Paul is engaged in correction, chiding, shaming, explaining, defending, exhorting, arguing, and pleading. The situation is desperate, and Paul must do whatever he can to help the church turn a corner to congregational health. There seems to be a variety of kinds of people within the church at Corinth. Rich and poor are visible when Paul corrects them concerning their observance of the Lord's Supper. Carnal and the super-spiritual. On the one hand, Paul corrects people who are accustomed to going to prostitutes, and on the other hand, he corrects people who see sex and marriage as somehow below their exalted spiritual state. And pagans and Jews. Though the church began with people from the synagogue, both Jews and uncircumcised worshipers who attended the services, most of the growth in the congregation after that seems to have come from the pagan population. Then, educated and sophisticated. While the congregation seems to be primarily people from the lower classes, some showed considerable sophistication in arguing why they should continue in their ways. There was certainly a group that was impressed with classical standards of philosophy and rhetoric. And finally, slave and free. A number in the congregation were probably freedmen, though many were slaves. 1 Corinthians was probably written from Ephesus about 55 AD and carried to Corinth by Stephanus, Paul's first convert in Achaia. 2 Corinthians was probably written from Macedonia a year later. God bless you as you study this book.